This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Natalie McLean. How are you, Natalie?
I'm fine, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. A little bit winded, as I was saying. I just ran up the stairs because of Zoom issues, but this is my first ever remote interview. I normally do
very exciting.
I always do my interviews face to face, but COVID-19 means we are doing it remotely. And also, where are you? You're in Canada, so that's a bit far.
Yes, that's right. I'm in Ottawa, Ontario. So COVID, yeah, it's changing everything, including how we connect like this.
Yeah, I know. Normally I'd have to try and run a trip to Canada past Jane to go and interview you, which, to be honest, I would have preferred to do that.
Right. I would love to come to the UK, but for now, this is what we have. So we're making the most of it.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So just for the listeners, Natalie McLean, you're I don't know, you've been in it for what, 2006 or even earlier as a...
Even earlier, yes. It's an older vintage for me. Yeah, it's about 20 years now
that you've been in
that I've been writing about wine.
Writing about wine, I know. When we first joined the wine trade, we used to get your Nat Decant. It was a newsletter, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I still have the newsletter. I just go by my name now rather than Nat Decant's.
Yeah. Why was the reason? For the listeners, because we sort of haven't really introduced you, you're a journalist. You've written a couple of books. You do all sorts of online tastings. You've got an app. You're a proper, full-fledged wine... writer/wine geek?
Exactly. Yes, I pride myself in being a double geek. So I'm a wine geek and a tech geek because I came from the high tech world before starting to write about wine. So I love the intersection between the two.
Okay. I'm an engineer, but I'm struggling with some of this technology these days.
That's great.
Cool. So what we're going to do today is just talk a wee bit about yourself and a little bit about what you've done and a little bit about what you offer. And we might just have a little chat about some wine towards the end of it, if that's all right with you.
Sounds great.
Cool. So when did you first get into wine?
Well, I didn't have a taste for wine growing up. I mean, I come from a Scottish family in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. So it was mostly beer and whiskey in the backyard, not even on the table. So I just didn't like the taste of beer or whiskey. I got tested later in life and I'm a super taster, which means I'm very sensitive to bitter tastes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that just was not appealing. And maybe it also had something to do with the beery breath of my uncles in those backyard gatherings. But anyway, I just wasn't drawn to it. So it wasn't until I finished graduate school that I finally had the money or the funds to get fancy. And I started experimenting with wine and discovered that I really, really loved it. Didn't have the bitterness, had so many wonderful flavors. It prompted me to wonder what's going on in this glass here. Why do I like this so much and not anything else alcoholic?
When was that?
That would have been in 93 that I graduated from graduate school. So, you know, during that time, I just sort of was experimenting, enjoying wine. I took a sommelier program at night just for fun.
Yeah.
And had no notion of writing about it. So it wasn't until my son was born, close to 2000, that I thought, well, I'm home here on maternity leave. I've completed a sommelier diploma program. What can I do to keep my brain alive? Mm. So I started pitching articles to local newspapers, magazines, and I landed one. And it kind of went from there. That gave me the confidence to keep going with it and not to go back to high tech.
Okay, that's quite cool. What were you doing in high tech?
I was with a company called Silicon Graphics, which was based in Mountain View, California, mm-hmm. SGI, which is now the headquarters of Google. And it was a supercomputer company, owned Cray as well. And I was their internet evangelist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So I would go around like to conferences and things and talk about the power of the internet. And I remember on one panel, there was Amazon, wine.com, and there was somebody else, a florist or something. So I was starting to get a little exposure to wine that way, and the online nature, but also I started arranging all my meetings on Fridays in Mountain View when I had to go to California. I worked from Canada where I am. Mm. And then I drive up to Napa and Sonoma on the weekends. So that's sort of where it's first developed, that passion.
Oh, lovely. Not in your home vineyard though, because you're not that far from Niagara-on-the-Lake. And it's, well, I got into wine on Niagara on the Lake, and you had to go to Napa Valley, for goodness sake.
That's right. That's right. Doesn't it always happen that way? Never in your own backyard.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in Ottawa, which is about a 6-hour drive from Niagara.
Oh, okay.
Of course, I've visited Niagara. It's beautiful, beautiful region, wonderful wines. But around Ottawa, we have a few vineyards, but they struggle because on average, we're colder than Moscow here in Ottawa. We're north.
Okay. That's why the beer and whiskey, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. More beer and whiskey and staying inside and keeping warm.
Cool. So when did you write your first book? So you started doing some journalist work, but you wrote a book in 2006, Red, White and Drunk All Over.
You can see how seriously I take the subject.
what drove you to do that? Because books are one of those things a lot of people write. They're not normally necessarily financially worth the effort sometimes. I'm not sure what the case is with you, but...
Yeah, well, I'd been writing for magazines, and then I started applying and was fortunate enough to win some writing awards here in North America. And an editor from Penguin approached me to write a book. So she planted the seed. Eventually, I went with Random House, but that I didn't have a notion to write a book. And, you know, I kind of, the Red, White, and Drunk All Over, I kind of approached it as I did my magazine articles, except it was much longer, of course, but it was a day in the life of. So I tried to be a sommelier, work in a vineyard, work in a wine store, kind of like the new journalism of the 1970s. If you remember Truman Capote and Joan Didion and Norman Mailer, they all wanted to immerse themselves in the experience so that they could write about it in a richer, deeper way. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I did. I sort of dove in and took that approach in Red, White, and Drunk All Over. And surprisingly, it ended up number 4 on our national bestseller list.
Oh, that's excellent. It was quite popular, I think, over in the UK as well. I remember
seeing it. They launched it there too. And it did really well. Again, I was surprised, probably more surprised than anyone.
Yeah. And I remember, I don't know if it was after that or before your next book, Unquenchable, but I remember you'd won the IWC Wine Educator of the Year as well.
I came in as a finalist for that award.
Didn't you win it? I was sure you won that.
Yeah, well, the judges told me I was 1 point away, which was kind of nice and kind of like,
Oh, no.
But no. It's all good because, I gained a lot of confidence from entering a competition like that and coming so close.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other writing awards spurred me on to, gave me the confidence because I didn't come from a wine background. I didn't even come from a journalism background. So this was something completely new. I came from high tech.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And you won the Louis Roederer, isn't it? Well, how do you pronounce?
I never can
pronounce that last one. My wife would kill me for that, but...
Louis Roederer, I think is how you say it. And they had the presentation in that big egg building in downtown London. I just love that. That was spectacular. What's that egg-shaped
big,
tall building?
Is it not the gherkin?
Yes, that's it. That's it. Yeah. Oh, it looked like an egg to me. Or what is it? The Quaveri, the egg-shaped fermenters that they use these days for natural wine.
Yeah, they get excited about that.
But it was at the top of that building, so we had a dazzling view of London at night. It was, I'll never forget that night.
I won an award there years ago, and we went up there for the final and the award. It was an e-commerce award because it was very early in the days, and we'd set up an online website for wine. And we were, I think we came second, actually, which was amazing. But I wasn't really expecting to win. I just went up there to drink some wine and have a really good time.
Absolutely. There was no way I was going to miss that party with they were pouring Louis Roederer, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And to just fortunately to win, you got a magnum of Louis Roederer, the Cristel, actually.
Yeah,
it was
like,
oh, my goodness. Anyway, it was great.
So tell us what you're doing now, because you've got podcasts, you've got online courses, you've got, I mean, we were talking just before the interview and you're saying that whilst COVID-19 is a bit of a disaster for you, it's actually been quite positive.
It has.
Or business-wise,
it's been surprising.
Not necessarily.
Exactly, business-wise for sure. I have taught wine tasting courses in person in the past and mostly through my book tours. But since the get-go, my business has been online, as you say, whether it's the mobile apps or the courses or the newsletter. But with the courses, what I was really surprised, what happened during COVID, and it's still happening, is I've seen a real spike in new students signing up for my food and wine pairing courses, because I think finally people are starting to realize you can learn about wine and food pairing at home, and it's almost easier. I mean, there's no babysitter, there's no driving to the class, there's no be there on Wednesday or it doesn't work. It's very flexible, and they get to meet wine lovers around the world. They get lifetime access to the course. So a lot of those factors work in favor of online courses. And I think it wasn't until COVID changed our minds about a lot of things that we could do online that more people realized, hey, it's possible, it's fun, and I need something to do during quarantine anyway, so I may as well learn about wine and come out stronger when the lockdown's over.
Yeah, exactly. So how does that work? Well, let's just touch on your podcast, because it hasn't been going for too long, a couple of years now, isn't it? Unreserved Wine.
That's right. Unreserved Wine Talk. It's been a year and a couple months now. I started in December 2018. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's still a baby podcast, but it's been going really well. Apple Canada named it one of the best listens of 2019. So it's doing well in our small pond here.
Is it?
But
geared,
I do
because it seems I've listened to a few episodes. It doesn't seem to be that geared towards Canada.
No, it's not. It's actually not. It's wine from around the world. So I'll interview winemakers, sommeliers, writers. I interviewed you, Chris.
Yeah. One of your better interviewees, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was. It was. You were great because you know how to tell stories. And so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for storytellers. So I'll interview, you know, weird and wonderful winemakers like Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon or Charles Back from South Africa, Goats de Rome label. Or I'll take sommeliers who, again, know how to tell a good story, because I think it's through stories that we learn about anything, including wine. And so you're right. The focus isn't on Canadian wine, though, of course, I've talked about that. I've interviewed people about it, but it's worldwide. Like recently, the interview was with Dr. Laura Catena from Argentina, who's also an emergency room doctor. Yeah. Now, we recorded that interview before COVID, so I wasn't taking her off the front lines, but she had a wonderful perspective, not only on winemaking, but wine and health, wine in moderation from, you know, her medical studies. So it's I love it. I love connecting with people through the podcast.
Yeah. She's done some interesting work on, with what's his name? I've forgotten the name of the doctor, the wine diet book on, not resveratrol, but
polyphenols?
No, it's polyphenols, but polyprosidine. No, I can't remember. There's a subcategory of polyphenols that Argentinian wines can have quite high levels of that are like resveratrol in terms of the antioxidant behavior. But they think
that's right. Because they're high altitude, so they get more sun exposure. It's not just about heat, but it's the sun and what it does to the grapes and, what's in there. It's all their high altitude plantings.
Cool. And tell us about your Facebook, because you do, you do online tastings to support the wine online course, isn't it? So, because you've got videos and then they participate in some online tastings, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I post free online tastings on Facebook every second Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So that's sort of like Toronto, New York time. And but I do get people from the UK joining that late night bunch, I guess. I even get people from Australia who must be drinking wine with their breakfast, but dedicated.
No, that's just classic Australian behavior.
Yeah, that's right. I love it. And so we tackle a wide range of topics there too. And so like tomorrow we'll probably be, you know, doing more wine and food pairing, whatever people want to talk about. Recently, I was doing pairings and talking about Niagara wines here in Ontario, because of course the wineries have had to pivot, so to speak, and their tasting rooms are closed, the restaurants are closed. So that's a big source of revenue. They're shipping direct. So that's what we dedicated the last two Facebook tastings to. We'll be moving on to other topics now, but we really wanted to get behind our local wineries and say, listen, it's easy. You can order direct online. And I think that's another thing that COVID has changed, that people realize just how easy it is to get wine shipped directly to your door.
Especially, I imagine Niagara's a bit like the UK, actually, in that respect, because it's the small producers who rely on cellar door sales. They're the ones that are being absolutely hammered at the moment because they just can't sell their product. They don't have the channels to sell it. Whereas if you can get into the mainstream channels, there's quite a lot of demand and multiple outlets. You know, in the UK anyway, supermarkets and almost anybody are doing a good trade. But if you've focused on cellar door, then that's really bad news.
Exactly. Like most wineries in Niagara, and I would argue around the world, are small, and that's a good thing. They're artisanal, they're paying attention to winemaking, but it also means they don't have the volume to fill the large liquor store chains. And while alcohol sales are up in those large chains, the small wineries aren't even on the shelf. So we really need to support them by getting behind their direct sales efforts.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite good.
But yeah, I do have to agree with supporting local. It's better for the environment. And you're supporting local businesses. I mean, all kinds of local businesses are suffering. But here is a product that is the highest value add agriculturally, I think, you know, on the planet. And so when you support your local winery, you're adding so much to your domestic economy. So for instance, in Niagara, every bottle we buy here adds about, I think it's like $90. Every dollar we spend adds 90 to our local economy versus like $1 for an imported wine. So it's dramatic with the spin-off jobs and tourism and restaurants and so on. It really makes a huge difference.
So you've also got an app. I had a look at it. I must admit, I didn't play with it because I couldn't seem to sign up properly to do it. So I could get some access to some of the features, but not all of the features. Tell me about your app, because it incorporates the classic take a photo and look the wine up feature from Vivino, which is quite cool, but that's quite a bit of technology and a lot of work. How did you manage to do that?
It was a huge project. So I launched the mobile apps back in, oh my gosh, I think it was 2010. So I've been working on the apps for 10 years. And of course, I came from high tech. Yeah. So I didn't code them myself, though I'd love to be that geeky, but I'm not. But I have been working on them for a while. And so I worked with a coding team. So they're both on iPhone and Android. And they do two things. As you said, they will scan a front label and instantly bring up my wine reviews, scores, pairings, as well as any reviews from the community. I've also incorporated a barcode reader. So when a bottle has a barcode, you can use a separate scanner on the app to access the info. And it's the only app in the world that does both. So you've got your label and your barcode to access the data and make sure the data is clean, because, you know, what we don't want is bringing up weird wine listings, or for the app to tell you, yes, this is the wine and you have to travel, you know, 3,000 miles to Wisconsin to get it. So my app will tell you where it's available in the liquor store closest to you. So it has real-time geo-sync inventory data. So that's very useful to people. They find, like, you know, regardless of where you are, here's the liquor store that has the wine that you want and how many bottles are in that store.
Oh, really? Is that, I imagine it only works mainly for Canada. Is that right?
Yes. It's mainly in Canada, though I've got app users from around the world, because it's got a lot of features that are relevant to anyone, even just scanning the label or the barcode and accessing, you know, clean data, meaning a good review, a review that you can rely on, a professional one, plus food pairings. And then it's got a whole bunch of other features, like a virtual wine cellar log. You can keep track of your favorite wines. It's got a pairing tool in it. It's got a lot of different things. So I would say 90% of it is very relevant and applicable regardless of where you live. It's that last 10% of accessing store data close to you that is most relevant for Canadians.
Yeah, no, I can understand that as well. And I suppose in Canada, it's quite I wouldn't say it's limited, but you've got you don't have to deal with a lot of different people usually, because there's a lot of state monopolies in Canada, isn't there?
Exactly. So it simplifies making an app. I'm not so sure it's the best thing for wine lovers for diversity and prices, but it sure makes, developing an app easier to get that stock and inventory current all the time.
Cool. All right then, Natalie, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I wouldn't mind talking to you next week about some of your wine food pairings and talk a bit about your philosophy on food and wine matching.
That would be terrific, Chris. I look forward to it.
Cheers very much.